Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. We're going to be talking about in today's program a very important topic. And I mean, can you imagine being on a football field, Pat?
Yeah. Not now, I could.
In his glory days.
Way, way, way back then.
Really?
Yeah.
He can imagine.
I can imagine.
The PS2
he can imagine.
Thing. He got that PS2 thing, you know, he thinks he's played football now.
He didn't say actually play, you said imagine.
We got to find that rag head. You had that, the look. You had,
oh, it's on the torch.
I've got it.
Oh, we have that.
It's on the torch.
Okay, good. We'll bring that up.
Yes.
Was he holding the ball or was he on the bench? I can't remember what
the
picture was.
He was holding the water. It was the water.
It was the water.
The offense was on the field.
But he looked so footballish. He looked so footballish sitting on the bench.
I was resting.
Is that what they call those guys at Portland?
It took me a while to realize. Wait a minute. He's not on the field. He said he's on the bench. But he sure looked like a football player.
He had it going on.
No, getting back
to it. There was a day.
But, you know, imagine being on a football field. You've never played it before. And you would be me. No. And but the other teams played football before. And they're playing the game. They know the rules. They know all these things going on. So you're walking around on this. What a nice lawn. I don't know why they put white lines on the lawn down here.
All right.
Oh, my goodness, they're coming after me. Well, whew, they just ran around me. It's totally fine. And you don't realize all of a sudden they get to one part of that yard, you know, that has some weird metal devices at the end of it that they dance around. But they start dancing and do weird dances, and people start cheering. I mean, how foolish does that look? I mean, it would look, I guess, sort of like the Saints in their past, you know, walking around on the field thinking, what's this, football going on?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is football going on? Or the Detroit Lions. And yes, that's not a croquet team.
Or the Mets.
Hey.
Anyway, so getting back to real sports. Exactly. And so, I mean, think about just because you need to really get that paradigm to understand what I'm going to be talking about. And at some point, somebody would say, you know, get off the field.
Yeah.
Or learn how to play the game. Or at some point, like the Saints, they just said, hey, we ought to read the rule book. Maybe we can win this thing. It was amazing. They read the book, and next thing you know, they prayed, and the Lord answered.
Yeah.
Drew Brees came in.
That's all right. They prayed
Sean
hard.
Payton and something about breaking knees. I don't know.
Allegedly.
And that's something.
Amazing.
Yeah. He don't use that when it comes to Muslim Brotherhood, but it comes to the Saints. It's allegedly. That is amazing.
Wow.
Allegedly he doesn't. And so, I mean, think about that. So you start thinking, like, there must be something going on here, you know, after, you know, the score is like, you know, 100-0.
Yeah.
And everybody's pointing at you going, get off the field. It's like, me? And you realize, you start getting an idea that something's going on. And then you start asking folks. You can't ask the other side. They're not going to tell you, oh, by the way, we're stomping you in the ground. You know, we're letting blood out of your body as we're smashing over you and scoring, because their goal is to succeed whatever they're going to do. Mm-hmm. But you can't ask somebody that knows how to play the game. And so if you do that, then you start realizing, I could do this. I mean, I have never put up a defense. I've never... I didn't understand there's an offense and there's a defense. They have a goal. And not only that if I play this properly, then I can get the ball. The ball's not going to always be in their hand. Doesn't mean I'm going to win, but it means I have a chance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like a feel for a man running from a whole bunch of football players. They can get you across the lines. What happened? Yeah. I was running for my life, man. They was after me. And, and it's sort of like America right now. When you're looking at, you know, what's, you know, we've talked about this, and it's important to understand, you need to ask the question instead of just screaming at your television, you know, complaining to your friends around the drinking fountain network, criticizing folks. I mean, think about it. It's amazing how when the game is done, that both sides normally in a football game, they're friends and they talk to each other and that type of thing. Listen, everybody in this game in America, whether we like it or not, are American citizens. Mm. And so we're all on the same side. Mm-hmm. The question is, what's your goal here? Because in America, you have a right to be a free thinker. You have a right to to pursue what you think is it's constitutionally sound, you can, you know, you got to find out. But you do too. You're in this game too. You're on this field as well. And there's some people that they believe that America is was founded on totally opposite things that it was founded on. And you can only pull God out of the paradigm if you think that way, because they think man can actually raise up a kingdom. They don't realize that God raises up the kingdom and he can take, he brought you into this world.
Hello.
And he can take you out of this world. And so, and somebody says, well, I'm evil and they raised me up. He says, yeah, you're just holding the land to keep the bugs out until the right folks come into the land.
That's it, Pharaoh.
But he told the promised land.
There was a plan for you, Pharaoh. There was a plan for you.
He told the promised land. That's what he told the guys, you know, in the promised land. It's like, you're going to have to disinhabit the people there, but they don't run them out yet because they're keeping the electricity on in your apartment. And so, so there's something going on. I mean, you're not crazy. You're not crazy. You're just in a football game and you didn't know it. You're being ran, and they're not telling you the rules. They're not telling you when they were dancing around and in this particular part of the yard that has these stripes on it that they scored, that they realized that they're aggressively pushing their agenda. And it's against the values of America's original intent. It's against the values of God. It's against the biblical values of the Bible. I mean, it really is. And this is what, as Christians, you know, and that's what we're talking to all the time, is Christians and those who are being drawn back to God, those who are being led to God. But when a Christian who's walking rightly before the Lord is around you and you're not a Christian, you feel loved, you feel honored. Even if you're their boss and you, you know, are totally against God and you don't want anything to do with God, they're going to be a good employee for you. And the opposite of that, if you have radical Islam working for you, you know, and somebody who's a total, you know, sold out to that mindset, that, I mean, you got to be very careful at a coffee break. I mean, you got to be careful with, they've come in with some and says, you know, Ali Akbar or something like that. It's like everybody runs out of the office, run. And so it's different. So having a Christian working for you that's not religious, that's not pounding you over the head, that's doing things that Jesus said don't do. Jesus said, you know, if they punch you in the cheek, call Pat, he'll take them out. No. He says, turn the other cheek. You know, he says, you know, if somebody asks you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles. If somebody wants to borrow from you, give it to them. And I need to ask you for some money.
Sure.
Anyway,
I'll get it from Pat.
Right. And so granted, we have a long ways to go. I mean, we have, you know, 81% of us are not even picking up our Bibles anymore in America who call ourselves Christians. Only 3% of us are actually believing in a way that that's God's plan for us and making changes in our life, according to George Barna. So that's probably the issue right there. I mean, you can stand at the gateways or the doorways of churches today with a mic, which John might do. And just start asking some questions like, you know, who is Jesus? How many gospels are there? What's a gospel? How do you get saved? Just simple little basic stuff. You know, how long did it take for Moses to build the ark, right?
Yeah.
And Noah to part the water.
Yeah.
But what's going on right now is there's an effective game. And it's not really a game, it's an evil thing, but just the comparison of a game. There's an effective team out here that has a goal, and they're successfully moving 10 yards at a time, 5 yards at a time. And it's the groundwork's been laid over all the way probably since Woodrow Wilson, really. But it's rapidly coming to a crescendo because all these things have met. All the narratives are beginning to merge like they've never merged before. Narratives being a lying narrative, an untrue narrative. But when there's coming together, it builds a story. And when I think about Marshall Gantz, he says, you've got to be able to tell a story. You have to be able to connect people. You have to tell the story, and then you have to tell a story of yourself in it. And then you have to put them in the story. And this is how Marshall Gantz, you know, this big organizer that quotes and operates under Sal Alinsky's techniques. And if people can see themselves in the narrative, good or bad, and they can see how they can respond, then they're going to be involved in what's called a movement. And that's what you're seeing taking place right mm-hmm. now. You have people that comes out of our education system, and they go, "I'm a terrible person." It's like, I pay $15,000 for you to hopefully get confidence and get educated to get a job, and all you do is come out is that you're a terrible person, mm-hmm. and you're cursing the forefathers of our nation, and you're cursing God, right. you're leaving your faith. Did I pay $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 that we're going to pay on for the next whatever for you to be a God hater? 70% of Christians, according to statistics, right? Mm-hmm. When they go to a secular campus, when you 50. Send your 50?
Yeah.
That's Christian campuses.
Yeah, Christian campuses.
But secular campuses, 70.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about Christian campuses, 50%. Okay. Yeah. 70%, according to statistics, that you send, you know, I got to get my kid an education. You know, I got, you know, I've done my best and taught them the ways of God or the ways of God, but they got to get an education. 70% of them leave their faith by the time that they're done by you paying. And then they'll pay on that leaving God thing for the next 30 years, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh. And so, but Christian campuses, let me tell you about Christian campuses, 50% leave their faith. When they go to the kids. So the thing is not education, obviously. That's what confounded the Pharisees. The thing is loyalty to God and following God. The Pharisees were thinking, how could these simple fishermen do this? Don't they understand? We are Pharisees. We have everything memorized. We are highly edumacated, you know? And so what is the answer? The answer is for us returning back to the founding principles of God in the church. Turning back to the original intent of the church, and which is Jesus Christ, and the original intent of our nation. And don't take him for granted, because there's people playing ball right now that are trying to steal God from our children, steal God from our nation, the knowledge of God, obviously not steal God. But remember, the Philistines came in and they stole the ark from Israel. Hmm. So it is possible to for the glory to depart. And they are effectively playing this ball. So we're going to talk about something today. I think it's going to really, you know, what is the goal?
What's the end game here?
What's the end game? You know, it's terrible to be playing at a thing. It's like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And you're going to be shocked at the end game, because the end game, according to Cloward and Piven, is just crescendoing, you know, as we begin talking about it. And as they were totally amazed in the 1970s, how successful they were as New York City filed for bankruptcy, we're seeing that success taking place in a rapid way for an entire nation right now. But it's not over, but we got to wake up and find out. We got to play ball and hold the line. I go right into this, not a game that people are playing right now. The what's at risk at this very moment? What's at risk is America as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
What's at risk at this very moment in our country is our First Amendment rights. What's at risk is the church's freedom to be able to do what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not over, but if we do nothing, if we stand on the field and do nothing, to think that you're going to win, to think that even heaven's going to root for you when you didn't decide to say, you know what, God did say that that people are destroyed for lack of knowing how to play the game. No. Mm-hmm. People are destroyed for lack of knowledge. You got to get into the Word of God to study it, to show yourself approved and finding out what God says. And so what God revealed, as you're wondering, you know, what is the end game here? Where are they going with this? And this is not about a political party. This is a whole group of folks in the nation and in the world that believe society, the great society, as is written about by Hillary Clinton and her thesis, her college thesis, which is talked about by George Soros. They have a viewpoint, a utopian viewpoint of what they think society should be like. And if it included God, it would be, you know, somewhat, but if it excludes God, it's like,
godless.
Yeah, it's heaven, it'll come, but you're not going to be able to do it. And so Cloward and Piven, who are Cloward and Piven? There's this couple that I think, you know, his wife's still alive. He's passed now. And she's part of some communist thing now. Mm. But they wrote this particular article in 1996. And let me just read it to you, because this, we've talked about it before. This is what's going to go on. We're going to get to the end game. What is the end game? It says in 1966, an article by Coward and Piven charged that the ruling class used welfare to weaken the poor, that by providing a social safety net, the rich doused the fires of rebellion. He goes on to write, poor people can advance only when the rest of society is afraid of them, Cloward said as he told the New York Times back in September 27th, 1970. Rather than placating the poor with the government handouts, wrote Cloward and Piven, activists should work to sabotage and destroy the welfare system. The collapse of the welfare state would ignite a political and financial crisis. That's the key word, a political and financial crisis that would rock the nation. Poor people would rise to revolt. Only then would the rest of society accept their demands. The key to sparking this rebellion would be to expose the inadequacy of the welfare state. Cloward Piven, earlier promoters cited radical organizer Saul Alinsky as their inspiration. Make the enemy live up to their own book. Mm. Make them live up to their own book, Rules for Radicals, Alinsky wrote in 1971 in this particular book that's right here. He says, when pressed to honor every word of every law and statute, every Judeo-Christian moral tenet, and every implicit promise of the legal society contract, human agencies inevitably fall short. And what you're seeing right now, It's the Cloward and Piven, Saul Alinsky model coming together about trying to get something done. And to be able to get something done, you have to crash the system. You have to overload this particular. In other words, America's kindness has to be maxed out.
Yeah.
You have to overload the kindness. And so he goes on to say in this particular article, and he says, and then make them live up using this. By the way, this is what was taught by our president before he was president. This is what was walked out and mentored Hillary Clinton was these methodologies. Make them live up to the Judeo-Christian tenets of the faith.
And a thesis is not an essay in a book review. I mean,
right.
An essay is a thesis is a well-researched, well-documented.
You can't graduate with your master's without
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And so he goes on to say in this particular article, which we'll make available to you on The Torch, he says, by doing this, the system's failure to live up to its rule book can then be used to discredit America. No, discredit it altogether and to replace the capitalist rule book with a socialist one. In other words, the goal is how do we discredit this thing? This thing is so good. I was listening to an atheist the other day, and he's talking about all the religions of the world, and he says he's a Muslim, but Muslims wouldn't agree he's a Muslim because he was what he was saying, and because he was denying the existence of God. God is whatever you think he is.
Right.
I mean, that's not
no.
Islam. Mm-mm. And so, but he says, man, there's this one thing about Christianity, because the interviewer is asking this, says, your book here, you know, we'll talk about in the future, you know, your book here has, you know, talks about Christians, how they've taken, out of all the religions there ever was, Christianity is the fastest growing, strongest. He says, because they really believed in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And because they so strongly believed in it, they were able to hold on what others didn't. It's because it happened. He's alive. Right.
Hello.
He's alive. And it's even an atheist had to, that's one thing, you know, the fact that their Lord raised from the dead and set him apart from everything else, which I thought was just a brilliant help. Thank you, atheist. And the authors noted that a number of Americans' subsidies at that particular time when they were writing this article on welfare was 8 million at the time, probably representing at that time less than half the number who technically could be eligible for the benefits. They proposed a massive drive to recruit poor onto the welfare rolls. Cloward and Piven calculated that persuading even a fraction of the potential welfare recipients to demand their entitlements would bankrupt the system. The result, they predicted, would be a profound financial and political crisis that would unleash powerful forces for major economic reform at the national level. So if you want to change a country, you collapse it. And what their theory is, the Cloward and Piven theory is, and you can see it taking place right now, because it's just like, get on the rolls. Do you know when you went and filled out your application for your Affordable Health Care Act, if you made a certain type of income, it would actually default you and say, do you want to get entitlements? Mm. I mean, here you are, you're trying to get your government provided insurance, right? And it actually sent you over to Cloward and Piven. I mean, it sent you over wow. to like get on some entitlements, because that's the way you got to do. You got to max it out. And we're going to talk about this is going to make sense when you think about everybody coming over the borders. You're going to make sense when you talk about government health care. It's going to make sense when you see what's happening with VA, what's happening cutting checks left and right. We're going to continue this conversation so we can get as much in as we possible. The article came from discoveringthenetworks.org. We'll make it available for you on the Torch. Go to vfntv.com and click on the Torch. This is from The Blaze. The Cloward and Piven, Cloward and Piven strategy, my mouth's not working today, is alive and well at the borders of America. This is written on June 10th, 2014. They talk about the Cloward and Piven situation. They said in a 1966 article in Nation, Richard Andrew Cloward and Francis Fox Piven, sociology professors at Columbia University.
New York?
Well, just Columbia. Mm. What happened? What happened to Columbia? Wrote that capitalism should be collapsed by overloading the government with financial demands that it could not meet. Overloading the government with financial demands it can't be met. Understand that this is not somebody saying, they're trying to logically think about this. They're going like, well, we can't afford that. I'm sure they're going to figure out we can't afford that. They're going to stop right. this. No, they're not. I mean, that's not the goal. You're in this, you're not in a game, but we're in this thing that they're doing. And their end goal is to overwhelm the system and to be able to start making financial demands that cannot be met. And these cannot be met. People said, well, you know, I can't believe that they had, you know, they approved this government health care because we can't afford it. And people start laughing. People who are thinking politics start laughing. Go, oh, this is not going to work. It's going to work because it's going to bankrupt the system. It's gonna be more than we can. It's gonna work in a big way, and understand we can start playing this game. We can say, okay, I'm starting to understand what's going on. Then it goes on this particular article, says the strategy is to collapse the financial system. The tactic is chaos. If a crisis does not exist, go to the borders. No, if a crisis does not exist, crash the hard drives of IRS. If a crisis does not exist, release the prisoner down in Gitmo over there. Yeah, five of them. Mm-hmm. If this is what he says, if a crisis does not exist, create one. The more chaos, the better. The solution is always couched in empathetic words such as fair, equal, humane, and just. In 1967, Cloward and Piven founded a national welfare rights organization to increase the numbers of people on the welfare rolls. Through a series of sit-ins, demonstrations, picket lines, and occasional rock-throwing, smashing glass, and broken furniture, they succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. By 1970, there was one person on welfare in New York City for every two people working in the private sector. By the way, he goes on to write, the city declared bankruptcy in 1975. That's the goal. The goal is to crash the system. And right now, according to governing.com, and it's been updated, it's not even really up to date, this is December 2013, which is a few months ago, that now cities such as the city of Detroit filed for bankruptcy. The city of San Bernardino, California has filed for bankruptcy. The town of
Mammoth
Lake, California. City of Stockton, who else is it?
Jefferson County.
Pennsylvania.
City of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, City of Central Falls, Rhode Island, Boise County, Idaho.
And that's Jefferson County, Alabama. And there's 38 altogether. And so, I mean, when cards begin to fall, the first one falls and the other one falls. When you start seeing cities and states talk about bankruptcy, you're looking at a success of overwhelming the system. You just don't have enough money to be able to pay the bills. And
the big bills in both of those two of those big cities was in Detroit and in California and San Bernardino. Both of those police law enforcement said, "Don't come here. Protect yourself because we can't protect you. There's no funds to pay for the police.
Come at your own risk." And if you look at the city of Detroit, it's already walked out this whole progressive Saul Alinsky, Cloward and Piven model, and you need to go there with a bulletproof vest and a. There's a reason why they're buying all these armored vehicles now inside of America. This book, Rules for Radicals, is what we're talking about in regards to Saul Alinsky. And this is, when I was reading this book, you know, makes you sick. Anyway, but when you read, this is their problem. This is what Saul Alinsky's problem was, other than the fact that Lucifer was who he's following mm-hmm. and he gave credit to the techniques. This book's dedicated to Lucifer. And it's what Hillary Clinton, by the way, wrote her paper on. And this, she was mentored by this author. And this is what the lineage of President Barack Obama is, where he came from, and some of that. But they said the problem was, is the middle class in America. This is what he writes about. The problem is the middle class in America. You cannot activate enough. There's not enough people who are down and out. There's not enough people who need subsidies. And so because there's not enough people to get on these systems, then we're never going to succeed at this. So the enemy of Saul Alinsky's methodologies was the middle class. But understand that thought process. Because America is so successful, because there's such a large amount of people that don't need government help, because it's such a small amount of people that need help, then this thing about using the poor to push your agenda to destroy capitalism to be able to bring in socialism is not going to work.
Yeah.
So somehow they had to figure out, how can we cause the people who are the most blessed people right now on the face of the earth, who have the most blessed families on the face of the earth, who are the most blessed women on the face of the earth, the women in the 60s, women in the 50s and 60s, no matter what people tell you in the narrative they gave you, every woman probably on the face of the earth would have wanted to be you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're living like a queen, I mean, compared to their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And you're not toting water on your head. You're not, you know, making fire. You're not growing things. You're just waiting for the kids to come home, you know, Opie to come home. And so when you look at that, and so the enemy began to sow a narrative to make people uncomfortable. I mean, look at this. You know, you need to go find yourself. You need to find yourself. Think about that. I found myself. I'm in the suburbs.
Yeah.
I'm living like a king and a queen. We got a paycheck coming in. We have retirement. So they begin to make to the point where, and Hillary Clinton was a big part of this. She celebrated about this, making women uncomfortable with the commitment to marriage, having to carry the child, having to give birth to a child. Okay, let's start with the birth control. Let's get that. That didn't work. The sexual revolution happened, and they found out you still can get pregnant on birth control. So they said, let's just end this particular birth in the womb. They had an article that was put out with a woman who committed her own personal suicide, really, but she had an abortion herself herself and killed herself doing it and the baby. And they took that and they ran with that. They ran with a couple of other things, and they turned the whole nation to say, you know, you can finally get out of the way, this thing mm-hmm. called a child in your womb.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roe versus Wade passed. Well, understand, these are the ones today that are in these leadership roles. These are Saul Alinskyites, these Cloward and Pivens who said, crash the system, but you got to max it out. So who's at the helm now? People who want to crash the system. And so you're looking at, they still can't crash it outside the hand of God. It depends, you know, where the church is going to do with God. They're going to turn to God. God will prevent everything. Secondly, is the middle class has to be torn apart. And so they turned the kids against the parents.
Yeah.
They turned the wife against the husband. They started writing contracts with husbands saying, okay, I'll stay married to you, but, you know.
Wasn't during the 60s all the rebellion with the young people and using the youth to rebel against government, family, any authority?
Exactly.
Whatsoever.
And these very same people. This is Bill Ayers. This is all those folks that are going on, including Hillary Clinton. She was a big leader. As a matter of fact, there's video footage of her walking down mm-hmm. Through all the protests that were going on in the context of what was happening. So think about it. So you have this big obstacle in your way, because if you want a socialist government, the big problem that's in the way is this successful capitalism, where most of the people are in the middle class and upper class, and they don't need government support. They're not going to go run down and get on some sort of subsidy because they don't need it. They're the ones that actually pay money in so that they could be on it. So they went and began to, how can you tear down the middle class? And when I come back from this break, I want to tell you, you've been under attack. You've been under you're on the field. They're playing this. It's not a game, but the analogy is they're playing the game. You didn't know that they were scoring against you. And one bill after another bill, one law after another law, one executive order after another executive order, one violation of the law after another violation of the law. What is it all about? It's about destroying the very thing that gets in the way, which is the blessing of God on this nation, where God has blessed the people of this nation. You got to get the middle class out of the way. And it's amazing. People are walking around protesting on the streets in New York City when they're interviewed. These are people that had a Harvard degree or a degree from Princeton, and we're going to break, but from Princeton, and they've been paid, everything. It's like, what are you talking about? You don't have any, but they believe the narrative, and they walked out in the streets like puppets, and you're going to be really shocked, because there's an author out right now by the name of, what's this guy's name?
Wayne Allen Root, I believe.
Yeah, Root, that he has a book, that Obama's criminal conspiracy to murder the middle class. And now you know why, because it's Cloward and Piven. You got to deal with the middle if you want Cloward and Piven to work. You've got to see real quickly before we go into this particular author, ABC News, take a look at this as they're talking about Dinesh D'Souza is talking about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
At the end of your film, you make a turn to politics more directly, and you essentially have a conspiracy theory about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama turning this nation into a socialistic nation, something you said started when Hillary Clinton was in college.
Yeah, it's not a conspiracy theory. Rather, a lot of people think that Hillary is like Bill. They go, well, we kind of want Billary back in the White House because, and the point we make in the film is no, there's actually a bridge connecting Hillary to Barack. And that bridge is Saul Alinsky. Now, many of us develop our political ideas in our formative years. I was a young Reaganite in the early 80s. Obama talks about standing at his father's grave and having a sort of moment of revelation. Hillary met Saul Alinsky in high school. She brought him to college. She wrote her thesis on him. So we're not inventing a connection between Alinsky and Hillary. The connection is well documented. What we show in the film is rare footage of
Professor
Alinsky.
Professor Dyson, just quickly, we have about 30 more seconds.
Well, here's the reality. Yes, she has interpreted and interpolated Alinsky, but she's not given the suspicions of Mr. D'Souza, somebody who's trying to bring down American government. She's trying to make that rare act of a politician in public, to bring ideas to bear upon the forces that prevail, that help the nation become its best self, and to work against the demons that are bespeaking, if you will, a negative impact on America. So Alinsky, in terms of his impact on Obama and Hillary Clinton, I'm sure the Alinskyites would say it's barely discernible now in their political lives.
Thank you both.
Meaning, thank you, Mr. Dyson, for letting us know that it is a reality.
That's right.
It's, can you actually find it in their lives right now? So this should make sense now then when you start thinking about, we talked about this early on, the prophecy, the word, the knowledge that God had given in regards to the research is that President Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are brothers and sisters in regards to who their mentor is, mm-hmm. and how they're walking and following the teaching. So now this makes sense. You got to deal with the middle class. You got to deal with the middle class. And I want you to listen to this particular author right here as he begins to share about what's going on. Author Wayne Roots in his book, Obama's conspiracy to murder the middle class. Remember, this is not some evil thing. It's about context of you got to deal with the middle if you're going to take her down.
It's a book with a controversial title, The Murder of the Middle Class by Wayne Allen Root. He's a former libertarian vice presidential candidate, an avowed capitalist and political commentator, and he joins us now from Washington. Wayne, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Mark, great to be with you. Don't forget, I'm actually the founder of AARP, Americans Against Rotten Politicians.
I think we need a lot more people like that. Well, you say the middle class is actually dying and not from natural causes, and you place the blame for the murder of the middle class squarely at President Obama's feet. Tell us why.
Well, you know, President Obama is certainly the central character in the murder of the middle class and in my book of that name, but there's a lot of other people involved. You know, the Federal Reserve, a lot of billionaires like Warren Buffett help. There's a lot of people participating in this murder of the middle class. I want to give you a couple of statistics. Since June of 2005, retail sales are down 6.9%, household income down 7.3%, And during this same period, you know, since Obama's been president, as an example, $3.7 trillion have been spent of your taxpayer money on entitlements, on welfare, on food stamps, on disability, on unemployment, on aid to dependent children, you name it. Trillions have also been spent by the Federal Reserve to pump up the stock market and make the richest bankers on Wall Street and the richest hedge fund managers even richer. So what we're doing is making the richest people richer, and we're making the poorest people, we're giving them EBT cards and showering them with welfare and entitlements, but everybody in the middle's got to pay for it all, Mark. And we're going broke, A, no one's doing anything for us, B, and C, your children owe the debt. This is a disaster of epic proportions, and your kids and your unborn grandkids will be enslaved to this debt for the rest of their lives. Their quality of life is going to be destroyed in the future. That is the murder of the middle class.
Wow, disturbing information. Well, Wayne, you make it sound like this president is involved in a calculated plot to actually destroy the middle class. Do you believe that?
Well, I do. You know, I remember I'm Barack Obama's college classmate, Columbia University class of 83. And all I could tell you about our classmates, not necessarily about Obama, but about everyone that I knew at Columbia University back in those days, was that, you know, almost all of them called themselves, not me, I didn't call them that, they called themselves communists, Marxists, socialists, America haters, really quite amazing. And they all talked about a plan in those days, Mark. This is what we spoke about for 4 years in college. They were all very hateful of America. They felt there was no equality. They wanted to create equality and social justice. Remember those words? They sound familiar to you? Obama uses them every day. And to achieve it, they wanted to put a plan into place called Cloward Piven. And that were those were two Columbia University professors, a husband and wife, who said you've got to overwhelm the system to change America, and you've got to do it from within by getting someone important elected and put in the White House into major positions of power, but particularly the White House. And you overwhelm the system with spending, debt, and entitlements. Well, darned if that system, if that exact program, if that plan in detail isn't happening right now in America. Look around you. The spending, the debt, the entitlements, the taxes, the regulations, they're all happening, and it's my Columbia classmate in the White House. I call it an attack from within.
Interesting, interesting. Well, you also call big government a slow-motion train wreck. Why do you say that?
Well, because they're not very good at anything they've ever done, Mark. I mean, you look at the track record of government. You know, the most expensive war in America's history is actually the war on poverty. $20 trillion and counting, more than all the wars in the history of America combined. By far, every war we've ever fought, $8 trillion combined. The war on poverty, only since Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s, over $20 trillion adjusted for inflation and counting. And we today have a worse poverty situation, a worse poverty picture than at any time in modern history. It's worse than it was when we started spending that $20 trillion. If you look at my book, you'll see mountains of statistics that prove not only is the middle class getting murdered, but one of the ways they're getting murdered is by taxation, where they redistribute our money and give it by the trillions to poor people to eradicate poverty, yet no poverty is being eradicated. We're wasting the money on nothing. Government a failure at everything it does. I like to tell the story, Mark, of the fact that Amtrak was supposed to be solved when the government took it over in just a couple of years, and that was 40 years ago and $40 billion ago. The post office has no competition, and yet it loses $16 billion a year. That's impossible to replicate in the private sector. In New York, we have legal government-run horse race gambling called OTB, and it's bankrupt. They declared bankruptcy. That's impossible to lose money at gambling, but government finds a way. And everywhere you look in my book, you'll see examples of government leading us astray. Obama's theory is to save the American economy and create jobs with government. In my book, it's 200 pages of solutions, how we give power back to the people. You ask the people and small business to solve the problem. Small business creates 2 out of every 3 jobs in this country, Mark, and government does nothing but kill jobs. We got to get back to small business and the middle class. In my book, I've got an 18-point plan called a middle class contract with America that will save this economy and create millions of jobs, just like my hero, Ronald Reagan.
All right. Well, once again, the book is called The Murder of the Middle Class by Wayne Allen Root, and it's available wherever books are sold. Wayne, thanks again for being with us and sharing with us your insights.
Hey, thanks, Mark. I wanted to grab one more point to end this interview.
Sure.
As my book tour started 48 hours ago, I got a note in the mail, and guess what it was? The cancellation of my family's health insurance. This is happening across America. It's the murder of the middle class. You, watching right now, will be getting that same note in the mail over the next year. It might be tomorrow, might be 6 months from now, might be a year from now, but pretty much every American will lose their health insurance, and the new policy will cost double or triple. Where will the middle class get the money to pay these bills? This is not a mistake. It's a purposeful plan. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Wayne.
So you're looking at, this is kind of the accumulation of, you got to go to the middle. You got to deal, you got to murder the middle. If you're, which is, by the way, a successful middle class is a healthy nation. When the majority of the population is making enough money, they're able to have children, you can afford your life, you're not living on government subsidies. Sure. That's actually a blessed nation. That's not a negative thing. And so they had to begin to change the narrative on the context of that. So you're seeing, so it's not against, when you're hearing this man talk about that, he's directly coming against the Saul Alinsky methodologies, the Clyrod and Piven. And we have to understand, we're in this game. This thing's happening right this moment. And the reason why our borders are being flooded is, think about that. That increases those who need to be on the system to crash the system. Get as many people over the border, 1,200 a day, reports are, coming over. And the first thing they're doing is getting them a court date, and they're sending them on buses to do what? To be able to get on the system.
Interesting enough, they're trying to get rid of the middle class and at the same time with the borders.
Right. And so that's what's going on. So don't think, you know, we got to take care of these people at the borders and understand what's going on. But they're using them in a political ploy to crash capitalism, to deal with the middle class, to be able to bring this thing to a point where all of a sudden they can push it, according to Clyrod and Piven, a socialistic form of government where all of a sudden government becomes God instead of God being God. Because in socialism, to a godless person, government is their God. No matter what form of government that a Christian is serving in or under, still Jesus Christ is their Lord and God is their God. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFNTV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.